Rough Trade is giving away a third of the first 3 months of the Rough Trade Club plus new music membership exclusively to 101 Part-Time Jobs listeners. Become a member of Rough Trade Club New Music and you'll receive the Rough Trade Album of the Month straight to your door every month on an exclusive vinyl pressing with bonus material. Club members have received exclusive pressings of albums from Sufjan Stevens, Sprints, The Last Dinner Party, English Teacher, and Over Mono, just to name a few, this past year alone. Sign up using the promo code CLUB101POD and you'll get Rough Trade's Album of the Month, Camera Obscura's Look to the East, Look to the West, for a third of the usual price. By signing up, you'll be getting Rough Trade's exclusive issue of the album on opaque purple in a gatefold sleeve, plus a bonus CD containing 5 demos. Don't want the album of the month but still want all the benefits? Sign up to the standard tier using CLUB101POD and you'll still get the first month free. You'll also get free shipping on all orders, 10% off at the bar and on secondhand vinyl in store, and exclusive access to sold out Rough Trade events. So don't hang around. Head to roughtrade.com/club and sign up with the code CLUB101POD. That's CLUB101POD and claim money off Rough Trade's Album of the Month today. This offer is for UK residents only. Do you play in bands? I did for the longest time, and I wish that I knew that DistroKid was a thing. I don't even think it existed back then. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of your royalties and earnings. 1 million+ artists rely on DistroKid to get their music on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all the major streaming services. When you get DistroKid, you can see a DistroKid bank and withdraw your earnings. You get notified when you've earned royalties and you can withdraw via the app. And you can even check your streaming stats on Spotify and Apple. Get 30% off your first year on DistroKid by going to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. 30% off for your first year. That's not bad. We know it's a tough world out there. Why don't you make it easier for yourself? And to get 30% off that free year as an artist, where you get 100% of your royalties and earnings, go to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. All right, stay with me. I'll be right back after this.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to 101 Part-Time Jobs with me, Giles Bidder. It's where I speak to bands about jobs. That's it. All bands are working during the daytime, playing by night. And the Chisel have just announced a Weekender tour, which says to me that they're able to get paid during the week and go on tour of the weekend. That's going to be with Rifle around the UK next month. The Chisel's new record, What a Fucking Nightmare, is also out next month. It's going to be a jam. What a brilliant band. Come out in 2021, I think, with Retaliation, that amazing record. I've seen them a couple of times since. I've been lucky enough to, and they've always been great. Go see The Chisel on tour. I spoke with Callum Graham on this episode about everything that he's done since he was a kid. We're going to get straight into it because this chat was a bit like that. My chat with Cal was a bit like listening to a Chisel record. It was kind of like, get in and get the fuck out. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to go straight into that. Cheers for listening. If you enjoy this episode, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Don't think I'm a twat for asking. It's just, that's what I got to do. Please leave a review if you've got 30 seconds to. Shout out to 2000 Trees Festival in Cheltenham happening this July. It's going to be ace. It's always brilliant down there. Good mix of punk and hardcore, as well as a bit of indie rock, a bit of folk as well. The Gaslight Anthem are headlining on the Thursday night. Manchester Orchestra, Better Lovers, Gouge Away, The Mysterines, Hot Mulligan, Teenage Wrist. If you want to go to 2000 Trees this July down in Cheltenham, it's just one. The best medium-sized festival for the third year running, I think, at least the second year running. That's the place to go. It's all independent vendors. Great time down there. Go and get your tickets now from 2000trees.co.uk.
Introducing Ampollo, the new app for musicians. Using AI stem separation, play along to any song, improving your practice and performance. Record audio or video and connect with musicians all over the world. Collaborating and creating together. Think Google Docs meets TikTok, but for musicians. There's a huge range of video and audio editing tools, and the best part, it's free. Download today and make your mark. Ampollo, made for music.
Go and get Ampollo if you want to play some music and make some friends. But right now, on 101 Part-Time Jobs, it's the Estimator Reculator, Cal Graham from The Chisel.
101 Part-Time Jobs.
You've sent over a couple of the jobs that you've worked,
yeah.
Haven't you?
I think so, yeah.
So you've been a kitchen porter at Pontins.
I tell you, when I got kicked out of school, I was 15 years old, I needed the job. Obviously, I didn't have any GCSEs, so I got a job at Pontins, and that's where it all started. It was fucking great.
What'd you get kicked out of school at 15 for?
I lived in Carlisle till I was 13, 14. And then I went to a school that was quite, it kind of let a lot of things go in terms of what you could get away with and that. But then when I moved to Blackpool, the school wasn't up for it anymore. So I got booed out of school, needed a job. My mum told me to fucking get out there and get one. And I ended up at Pontins. That was the best year of my life.
As far, I grew up in a town where I went to the school where people would get kicked out, but generally people behaved like people knew they'd get reprimanded. My mates who went to school down the road, they got away with fucking murder and they still talk about it. It sounds like a lot of fun. So that's that first school that you went to was a lot of people having a lot of fun getting away with being kids.
That's it. Just after I left, it got the lowest Ofsted score in the Northwest, apparently. So it had to rebrand itself from Morton School to Richard Rose Academy.
Heard that story before. That's funny. I mean, how, looking back now, like as an adult reflecting on it now, like how do you reckon you took it? Were you, because I don't, like, you know, when you're 15, even if you're pretty hard, you're still like a vulnerable person, aren't you?
Oh yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, I look back on it and I think I could have done better in that, but it was the
everyone
place
does.
That I lived in, that it wasn't really nurturing people like me, you know. And so you misbehave, you get told to fuck off.
And going to Blackpool, there are shows. I mean, I've only been up once for a Rebellion, so I get like that weekend is obviously so different to what it's usually like. What was your experience moving there and meeting pals there and hanging out?
There was like, I don't know, there was a music scene in that, and there was people that were into punk, but it was only really when it was like Holidays in the Sun or what became Wasted Festival, what became Rebellion, that you really got some gigs and that. You had the odd punk gig here and there, but it wasn't enough of a scene to ever do anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a scene, but it was all different types of bands rather than there being an actual like punk scene or even like a hardcore scene. There was nothing.
Right. So what were you getting up to? Were you able to, like, were you excited about punk rock at that time in your life?
Yeah. No, I loved it. But, and I had mates who did as well. And we started bands and this and that, but it never went anywhere. No one gave a shit.
Yeah.
They give a shit in a kind of like, you know, when you're 15, 16 years old and you're just mates with loads of fucking people and all the kids are in different types of bands and stuff. You play at the community center and shit like that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what it was like. So people supported you there. But in terms of like an actual scene, now there wasn't too much, to be honest.
I often think about that. Like, I'm from near Watford and there were promoters and you were close to London, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes away from town. And there were the older bands and everyone always had like an older brother or an older sibling that had done stuff my whole life. Like I feel now I'm really like, I realize I'm so lucky for it because obviously not everyone gets that.
Oh no, it's like, I mean, we used to go over to Manchester, Sheffield and had to go to gigs and like, if there was punk stuff or hardcore stuff and that. But no, and I did in the immediate vicinity, it was fuck all. And especially on the hardcore side of it, I don't think there was many people that were even into hardcore when I was younger. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I felt very alone at times in Blackpool.
Yeah, a bit of a romantic seaside town, isn't it? But then obviously it's got that tension with being like, obviously it's been completely fucked over by the government for years and years and just totally left to sort of stewing itself. I mean, that's me. That's probably a bit rude me saying that because I've never lived there.
No. It's completely true. I mean, the whole foundations of Blackpool as a town was like, it was a working class, like it was a local working class place where you could go on holiday and stuff. And then as soon as it got cheaper to fly, I don't know, Ryanair and shit or whatever in the 80s, it kind of got forgotten about and left behind. So it's cheaper. I mean, for me to get a train from London up to Blackpool, talking about 150 quid return. I could fly to New York for that, you know?
Yeah. And you witnessed that happen. You're that age, like you saw that happening in the 90s.
Yeah. I mean, but about the same time, it was long gone by then, to be honest. It was already fully in it. I mean, but Blackpool as a town, it's because it's seasonal work and things like that. So it'd be booming, everyone would be working, everybody would be in work constantly, and there'd be like good vibes and that, and it'd be decent. But then as soon as it goes out of season, you get like 5,000 people unemployed overnight, you know what I mean? And it's like, and for a lot of people, they can't really handle that and can't really move on from that. And it's very sad to see, and it's very sad to grow up around it as well.
How does that realize itself then? Does that mean like people go to the pub more and get like pissed more and get angry more? And how did you see all that stuff affecting people?
Oh, I mean, I wouldn't just say getting pissed because people couldn't afford it. It was more people start shooting up smack, people start fucking robbing people. And there's a high crime rate, there's a high suicide rate. And it's got like one of the biggest fucking, like, it's a drug capital of the UK and that. So it's like, yeah, people are angry and people are pissed off, but it's like, there was other things, you know, people just couldn't fucking survive.
And you got away with it. You know, you got between the cracks and, you know, you were able to not fall in with the wrong people and not get depressed.
No, I 100% fell in with the wrong people and 100%. I mean, I was never a part of, I've never been on any hard drugs or anything like that, but I've seen it happen around me and to my friends and stuff, and I've seen them all promising people, like, just waste away and stuff like that. I had two of my best friends die before the age of 16, you know what I mean? It was through drugs as well. So it's like, even though I haven't been a part of it, it's definitely been a part of my life, you know?
Mm-hmm. And as a kitchen porter, that's where a lot of that shit happens, isn't it?
I mean, with Pontins especially, it's like people used to live on the sites and that. Right. So it's like, so if you worked there, you could live on the site, get all your rent paid for and stuff like that. So you had a lot of people working there. It just kind of wanted to get off the grid a bit. Mm-hmm. So you met some fucking wrong-uns, but you met some characters as well. Though. It was all right.
Yeah, it's exactly those kinds of places that you meet those characters you never forget, and for better or worse, right? They're going to be some really inspiring people that you meet there.
Yeah, memories for life.
It's holiday, isn't it? It's like rules go out the window in some places like that.
Oh, no, I mean, even when I was a kid going to Butlins and that, like, even going to Pontins, when you went to those places, like, it was kind of like its own little village and stuff, so people just go crazy.
Yeah. How long did you stay there for?
I worked there for a year before I moved back. No, before I started being their carpenter.
Yeah, I mean, a year's quite a long time when you're that age as well.
Yeah, it was my first job. I actually loved it as well. But I actually quit my job so I could go to Leeds Festival because it wouldn't give me the time off. So I quit after a year.
So the lock-up stage. That's funny. And then so what? So you were left without a job and you were like, okay, was moving back to your hometown. Was that the obvious choice?
Well, it's like it was the obvious choice because I didn't have anything else. It's like I grew up around construction. I didn't have any GCSEs, obviously. I didn't really have anything going for us. I had no ambition to do anything other than to just to fucking exist, to be honest, or just to, so I got the opportunity to become a carpenter, and then it went from there, you know. It's because I went to work with my dad back in Carlisle afterwards.
And all right, it can be all right money, can't it? You can walk away with a couple of hundred quid in your pocket from a day.
Not when you're an apprentice for 3 years, though, because that's when they make the money off you. They teach you the ways of the world and that, and how to do it, which is fair enough, man. It's like you get taught the craft at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But you're still getting paid. I mean, when I see how much people get paid to fit a door these days, and I think that my dad used to give me 20 quid for each door that I could hang, I think it's fucking ridiculous.
How did you deal with that? You must have known at the time that, you know, you're the bottom of the food chain. How did you deal with that?
I mean, I did, but I was kind of, but at the same time, I'm not the smartest person, so I think I just got took advantage of a little bit. I mean, that's probably because I listened to hear that.
And what's at Carlisle? Was there stuff going on there? Was there bands going on there? Were you playing in bands in Blackpool or Carlisle around that sort of time?
In Blackpool, I was in a ska band when I was 15 years old. When I moved back to Carlisle for work and that, there was a scene in that, but I never did a band since then. An enjoyable time, but when I moved back to Carlisle, there's a scene and stuff, but again, it was just kind of like a music venue that exists to exist, and there's rolling bands coming in and out and that, but no real music scene really existed there. In terms of punk and hardcore and stuff, obviously there's like metal bands and stuff, but I'm talking about the stuff that I'm into.
Well, and what were you into that time? So you're into ska punk. I feel I was banging into ska punk and Lightyear and Capdown and Five Knuckle.
So when I was like 15 and that Lightyear and that were fucking like, I loved Lightyear and I liked Five Knuckle as well. Mm. But around about then, it was when I was getting into punk and hardcore and stuff like that. Then as soon as I started getting into that kind of stuff, then it was just everything else just kind of went out the window a little bit, you know, and it's kind of put your focus on that.
Carpentry, I mean, I want to ask without asking, because I feel like anyone I know who's done any kind of that sort of stuff has at some point, you know, nearly lost a fucking finger. Have you had your run-ins?
I had a run-in with a cross-cutting saw where I was feeding it in and I pulled down the to bring it down, and the protection guard was actually up. So normally when you pull it down, the protection guard comes up, but it was already up and I pulled the saw down. I had my hand like this. And instead of pulling my finger into the saw, it knocked it away. So I had a big gash on my finger, but it could have actually just pulled it in and just mangled my hand. And also I bought a new Stanley knife once and I was cutting a bit of plasterboard and I took the tip of my finger right off. You can't tell now because it's been about 20 years, but it was at the time that the flesh came off and everything. I went proper faint.
Oh, man. My girlfriend, we live opposite a Morley's. And not too long ago, we were pissed and my girlfriend was like, give me the big bottle, like give me the big ketchup, you know, the industrial one. And we got home and because it's the industrial one, it wasn't like sort of user friendly. So she got a Stanley knife and fucking slashed her leg open. I'm laughing because she's fine now, but like those things, they cut through flesh like anything.
That's it. I mean, it's like they're made to cut things like plasterboard and that, but Jesus Christ, you could do some damage with it.
Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You know, like, I think the thing that makes me like want to do this interviews thing and speak to people and like get this on record is because I feel like at some point in anyone's life, you realize, oh, fuck, if I don't take control of myself, like no one else is going to do it for me.
Yeah.
And I feel like people have like one or two or three moments in your life where that happens. Did you have any of those sort of, I don't want to call it like spiritual moments, but any of those moments where you thought, oh fuck, this is up to me. You know, no one else is going to do this for me.
I mean, it relates right to your podcast. I mean, the two main times in my whole entire life was when I left Pontins. And I didn't know what the fuck I was going to do with myself. So all my friends at the time, going to college, doing this and that. I really had no interest in that. Grew up around construction, family all in construction, this and that. I knew that I just needed to make a change and I needed to do something about it, because otherwise I was just going to fall to the wayside a little bit. And I had a little bit of a freak out about it. And then that's when I took my my dad's offer to be an apprentice joiner. And then the next time was when I actually stopped being a joiner and went to be an estimator. Because I used to have, we had a contract with Centre Parks, and this guy that we used to call Frank the Tank, he was an older fella, and he used to like kind of mentor us a little bit and that, but he used to just slag his work off to fuck, like constantly. And he would turn around to us, and I was hammering in nails, Centre Park, 5 o'clock in the morning, fucking big Vizzy jacket on, pissing down rain. I was like, I don't know, I think I was like 21 at the time or something, and it was like, I was just like, I'm kind of getting fucking sick of this. And Frank turned around to us and said, you see, you youngins, you come here and you're doing this manual labor and that, you're getting paid decent amount on that, but you're working 60 hours a week and you're putting your body through hell. And he's like, I wouldn't do it if I was you. And at the time, the firm that I was working for, they were offering voluntary redundancies because it was the 2008 recession. And it just pushed me to take it. And then I used that to become an estimator, which is obviously what I do now.
And what is that? What is an estimator? What does an estimator do?
It's just construction. So it's basically, it's just estimating construction costs.
Right. So you're clever. You're good with numbers.
I mean, Excel's good with numbers. I wouldn't say I am.
what does that mean? Will you go round to a site and get your pencil out and
if a client wants to build a building, they'll come to us. And I'll say, look, I want to construct this and that. I need to know how much it's going to cost. I need you to help bring a contractor on board. And they'll work with the contractor to arrange a price, go right to site, and then price the works, value any works done, pay them, and this and that. So it's kind of like the more financial side of it. But you've got to have knowledge of construction costs, and you've got to be able to have worked in the contractor side as well if you want to be good at it.
And that means you could move around town as well, because obviously you live in London now.
Yeah, I've been here 13 years now, and I fell in love with the city, you know what I mean? It's like, the North's my home. I am a Northerner, but I couldn't go back. To be honest, when I go back to Blackpool, even when I go back to Carlisle, they remind me of mini Londons these days, isn't that? Like, it's like these places used to have their own identity to me, but then I go to it, and it's just trying to copying the same thing again and again. So I go up North, and I just think, oh yeah, it just seems like London. There's nothing unique about it to me anymore.
Did you find your place in London quite quickly? Because like I say, I'm from like just outside the suburbs, really. And it took me fucking 10 years to live in a place, this place. You know, it took me 10 years to find somewhere that, A, I could afford, but I also liked, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
it's hard.
I think I'm still trying to find my place in London. It's when I first moved down here, no, my accent was a lot stronger. Maybe the slang I was using was a lot more direct, and so people didn't know what the fuck I was saying. I think people still to this day with it. So it took a couple of years for me for that to soften maybe slightly. And then at first 2 years in London, I fucking hated it. I live in Walthamstow now, but I've continuously moved further and further out as each year has gone on, because the cost, the how much it costs to fucking live here, it's coming to my
house. Hey, band's been kicking off last few years. New record coming out on Pure Noise. Obviously, like big US label. Like some amazing bands on that label. Bouncing Souls.
Yeah. Less than Jake.
Say what?
Less than Jake.
Less than Jake. Here we go. What's that been like in the last few years? Because, I mean, I guess I first heard you probably 2 years ago when that first record came out. Is that 21?
Yeah.
And then it's kind of ramped up pretty quickly. You've done US tours. You've toured a lot elsewhere as well. What's that been like on a personal level, trying to fucking work out the hours in the day to do it?
I mean, it's literally my vacation days that take. So we'll do like three or four tours a year. And then we'll do weekends and stuff like that. But it's literally, I haven't had a holiday in 4 years. That's the thing. 3 or 4 years. And it is tiring. It takes it out of you. But at the same time, I do fucking love it. And it's, I know that if I wasn't doing it, and I turn my back on it, I'd miss it. You know what I mean? So I'm actually happy to do that. But I do think I need to start striking that balance a little bit better.
I think what people are getting out of the chisel, what I'm getting out of the chisel is like, I lived kind of vicariously through your lyrics, you know, even like, what a fucking nightmare. And, you know, it sounds maybe so basic to say, but sometimes like, I don't admit to myself, like, oh, I'm fucking pissed off about that because I want to be like happy chappy. I think some bands, and it goes for maybe what I see in hardcore as well, is it frees me up to feel a bit like, yeah, fuck off. I'm going to have fun. Like, I'm not going to be told what to do. I feel, you know, that kind of feeling that we had as kids, right? That's the feeling you get when you get into punk and hardcore. I get that from the chisel, and I think a lot of other people do as well.
Nah, bro, I appreciate that, man. I mean, in terms of the lyrics and that, it's because I do all last minute. I write the lyrics last minute. And I'm not the most, I don't have the best vocabulary. I can't fucking, I wish I could do like little meanings behind stuff and that, but I just can't. So literally, I can only go like, you fucking cunt, you fucking.
Yeah, but you don't need to, because fucking call a spade a spade.
That's true, yeah. No, I do agree with that, but I'm not intentionally doing that, you know. It's like, it's just all I can fucking do.
What are you most looking forward to this year? Are there any places you're heading to that you're really keen on?
We're playing. So Welcome to Rockville and that, and this other one playing like Slipknot and shit like that, and like Korn and Judas Priest and stuff. And it's like, for a band like us to be doing something like that, it's I love it, but it feels fucking weird, if I'm honest.
And playing some of those big festivals, you're going to have fun running around, nicking people's beers and generally like having a blast. Right? I mean, that's what I would do.
Oh, no, that's the thing. And it's like, since we've started like playing festivals and stuff like that, I just kind of embracing it a little bit because it reminds me back to when I was a kid and I used to actually want to go to these festivals. So it's like, when I'm going and playing them, I'm still going about and that, and it's like, it brings it all back, you know, it's decent.
Bowery Ballroom. I mean, that's not, how do you feel about that? That's wild. I mean, I haven't been to that venue myself, but over the years, I see bands that I love playing there. And you see their messages being like, this means a lot to us. What does it mean to you?
I mean, it's a big deal, to be honest. It's like, because we actually played there last year for Warhogs, like reunion show. But for us to be doing our headline show there, and for it to sell out in a good month or so before the show even happened, and for it to be the biggest show, it's quality, man. I'm very excited.
And Homefront are ace. Saw them at the Hi-Viz show.
Yeah. No, I mean, I did a song with them last year, and the song that we've done together, we sang it once in Barcelona a couple of weeks ago. So this is going to be the first time outside of that we do it together again.
Nice. Mate, that's so exciting. I'm so buzzing for you. You know, I'm excited to hear the record.
Man, I appreciate that.
It's exciting. And you know, it gives me and my mates and whoever, it gives us a fun place to go to. You know, you're making And that's like, what better thing than that? So thanks so much.
No, thank you, man. I really appreciate that.
Just to end with, I like to hear about people's like work gaffes, like people's work mistakes. I've always been quite bad. And, like, on my first day, I've always said something stupid. I've always embarrassed myself. I've been that person so many times. So maybe it's like a bit of me that wants to hear other people's versions of those stories. But when I say that, does anything come to mind? Any times you've embarrassed yourself or fucked up at work? Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's one where I really did fuck up, and this could actually come back to bite me if the wrong people actually hear it. But it's when I took voluntary redundancy, it was one of the last chalets that we were doing at Centre Park, and the big waste pipe had just been installed. And I was fucking about with my tape measure, and it was a big chunky Fat Max. It was like, it's about this thick, literally probably the width of the pipe, and it fell in it. And I put my arm down it to take it out, but I couldn't get it. It was stuck down. And then when I left, I found out like a few weeks later that it all got clogged up and it all had to be taken out and stuff like that. So that's the big one that I remember. But generally, like, yeah, it's always been quite, it's all right. That's probably the one where I can remember vividly getting my fucking pants when it happened.
There was a big measuring tape and it fell down the shit pipe. And
the newly installed shit pipe. Looking for some shit in it, but you know.
I often think, what's it called when you've basically done a crime, but enough time has gone past where it's like it doesn't matter and you can't get in trouble for it anymore?
I forgot what it is.
I like that though. That's funny stuff. Maybe I'll check out the years and make sure
I'm absolved of any any guilt.
Exactly. All right, Cal. Thanks very much. I appreciate this.
Thank you so much, man. I've had a great time.
There she was. I cut her off a little bit there. Cut him off. Cal Graham on the chisel on 101 part-time jobs. Cheers for listening. If you got this far, sticking to my word. Although I'm not actually. I tried to make these episodes no longer than the band's record. So I'm not sure if we've done that here. But what a fucking nightmare. The Chisel is coming out on the 10th of February. Catch them on tour around the UK with Rifle. What a fucking band. Cheers for listening. If you're able to subscribe, mega. If you're able to leave a review, boing. Amazing. Cheers. And I'll be back next week with some new episodes. See you then. Ba, 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 ba.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.